Okay, it's 1 o'clock, so I think we'll get started here in the first afternoon session of the first day of the conference here. Our first speaker is Raina Heaton, right? Okay, awesome. Is the projector going to come back on?
Okay, so I'm Raina Heaton. I'm a PhD student here at the University of Hawaii Manoa. I'm also a research assistant with the Catalog of Endangered Languages. So if you don't happen to already know what the catalog is, it is a large in-progress project to create the most comprehensive catalog on endangered languages in existence. You can access the preliminary version, which I hope many of you have done already, at the endangeredlanguages.com website. So today I'm going to talk about the reasons for the creation of the catalog, why we thought it was necessary, the various collaborators on the project, a brief history of what has happened with it so far, which includes phase one. We are currently in phase two, so we'll talk about what goes into that, and then conclude with some notes on the future of the catalog. So everyone here, because you're here, I'm sure is very familiar with the language endangerment problem, the consequences of it. But I thought we would begin briefly by just telling you some brief stories that you might or might not have heard before. So Tevfik Esenç, I apologize if I butcher any names. I did my best. So he was the last known speaker of Ubik. He passed away relatively recently in 1992. His knowledge of the language can largely be explained by the fact that he was raised by his grandparents, both of whom were fluent native speakers. He spoke three or four languages in total, and thankfully for us, he worked extensively with a French linguist to document the language and the culture before he passed away. He also was relatively proud of the fact that he was the last speaker of his language and had that inscribed on his tombstone. This is the grave of Tevfik Esenç. He was the last person able to speak the language they call Ubik. Next is Yopi Mabinda. He was the last speaker of Regui. Who I fortunately could not find a picture of. This is the picture of the immediate family tree for it, though. He was working with a linguist when he was murdered in 1988, which is very unfortunate, of course, because murder. Also because he was the last speaker, so of course his language ceased to be spoken with his death. And also because these other languages are already either deceased or very close to, I think, Mu has maybe two left, but it's very close to being an entire language family just gone, which is a very sad state of things for us. And lastly, probably most famously, is Big Bill Neddy. He was the last native speaker of Gagaju, a language of Northern Australia. Besides of language, one of the biggest contributions he gave to all of us was the Kakadu National Park, which he helped to create to protect his ancestral lands from development. He dedicated much of his life to teaching others about the traditional and sustainable land practices of his people. He has also written two books, one of which is Kakadu Man. And he not only worked with linguists, but also kind of broke traditional practice, because a lot of times, you know, you can only share a certain information with people who are initiated and able, like, to receive that information. He realized that no one was doing this anymore. There was no one to pass it on to, so he shared it freely, which is why we still have it. He passed away in 2002. So these three are a small subset of the languages which have died in the past 25 years. So it is abundantly clear that language endangerment is one of the major crises facing the world today. This is, of course, especially important to us as linguists, since we're losing data and any ability we might have to have a really good look at linguistic diversity in the near future. There have been calls to organize our documentary efforts to record languages most imminently moribund first, basically. And to achieve that kind of organization, you need a comprehensive source with information on all of the endangered languages of the world, which is where the catalog comes in. There are, of course, you know, other sources for this sort of thing. So you've got Ethnologue, UNESCO, WALS, the World Oral Literature Project, and the Glottolog. And Langdoc things, but there are several things that this catalog is going to provide to the general populace that those do not necessarily do, and certainly not as a single resource. So that's namely the kinds of information we plan to produce. So we include video, audio, indexes of endangerment documentation, which I will mention again a little later. And we also include documents and grammars and actual, you know, various types of documents that are accessible through the sites, and not just the citations, so you can actually get to the document from the site, which is really nice. We also include a variety of sources, so you can look at where there's disagreement between factions on what the speaker number is or anything like that, where the language is located. We also have very interesting features that come through just the site that don't actually have to do with the catalog, which Sean Simpson will talk to you all about at noon. Or two, yes. And we also hope to have the most up-to-date information of anyone out there, because we're collecting this now, right from the ground. So, through LCAT, we hope to inform users about the challenges facing endangered languages, and to encourage efforts to slow the loss of these languages, to gather all the possible information available on endangered languages into one easily accessible location from anywhere. If you have the internet, you can get to it. And to provide documentation endangerment indexes so researchers can target their efforts better. So the documentation index is a thing still in progress. It's not out yet. But it's ideally so that you can see how much documentation has been done already. So if there's not a lot, you can go contribute. And the endangerment index is so you can see how endangered it is. We have our own, which I will also talk about later. So, is that what I want? Right, okay. So, the primary goal of LCAT is to be the definitive and authoritative resource on the endangered languages of the world that is accessible to and applicable to a very wide range of people. So that's not just academics, but also teachers, students of any kind, community members especially, and just anybody who happens to be interested. So, we also don't want to create a catalog of only recycled information taken from other large sources. We want to collect the most recent sources and even do, you know, individual research on individual languages to provide the most comprehensive look as physically possible. Amassing this amount of information is also more globally informative, so that we get a better picture of what language endangerment actually looks like, which is what Lyle Campbell is going to talk to you about after me, the new knowledge we've gleaned from doing this project. Right, I mentioned the endangerment scales, and of course to make this easily accessible. So before I continue onward, I would like to make a quick distinction, because it's not immediately clear from looking either at the site or hearing me talk about LCAT what these two things are. So LCAT is the catalog of endangered languages, the information base. So I'm talking about the database of all the information that goes into endangered languages that we have from all over the world. This is the interface, I guess. When you pull up the catalog, this is the first thing that comes up. From there, you can navigate via continue to the various sources for the language and click and edit all of those. Or you can look at them all holistically. So this is the first, 25 entries of the catalog, just alphabetically listed and linked. You can search by code, language name, region, user, and soon country, which is exciting. Yeah, and that's just alphabetical. Whereas the ELP is the Endangered Languages Project, which is the website interface which hosts the catalog and is there to make the catalog public. This is probably what you're most familiar with if you happen to have gone to the site. It's also still under production, but it's quite good. It also holds a bunch of information that doesn't go directly into LCAT. LCAT collects information about sources and about location and things like that. This is where people or researchers or anyone can upload video and audio clips and other resources like dictionaries, pedagogical materials, and other scholarly and non-scholarly documents. So, this project is a highly collaborative effort between many different groups and institutions. First, the research and the catalog creation is funded by an NSF grant from 2011 to 2015, so we have a few more years. And it's a collaborative effort between the University of Hawaii at Manoa and the linguist list at Eastern Michigan University. So EMU is in charge of the programming and the technical aspects of both the catalog and the Endangered Languages Project site. and all of the information about the endangered languages in Australia and in Africa. We here at UHM work with the catalog and are in charge of all of the information on all of the other endangered languages of the world, so those that aren't in Africa or Australia. Next is the regional directors. They're a group of very, very talented linguists with expertise in various regions of the globe. They're responsible for checking information on all of the languages in their region. So these are the authorities on everything, and they field any questions we might get about anybody from anybody in the area, from users who use the site. Google was also involved during phase one, helping develop the ELP site. And the First Peoples Cultural Council is heading the governing committee, which took over after Google left oversight of the Endangered Languages Project site. And lastly, the Alliance for Linguistic Diversity is a conglomeration of various groups who are interested in the preservation of endangered languages. So here we are, the EMU team and the UHM team, and many other volunteer participants on each side. And our lovely, very, very important regional directors, who are absolutely crucial for achieving our research goals. Like I said, they're the experts and the authorities, and we go to them whenever there is any sort of dispute over anything. So, a brief history of how LCAT came to be. It was a project brainstormed by a group of 50 international specialists at the Endangered Languages Information and Infrastructure Project Workshop held in Utah in 2009. They were very focused on making a catalog that was maximally useful, especially when it came to information that would be valuable to communities themselves. With a well-planned project in hand, an NSF grant was awarded to fund the project in 2011 as a collaborative research project between UHM and EMU. Google then wanted to support the project and gave the project their technical expertise for phase one. So, phase one. Phase one really was the creation of a preliminary database. So, it was constructed between August of 2011 and May 2012, which you might think is a very, very small amount of time to put together a catalog like this, and it is. So this meant that an insane amount of data entry was going on in an effort to get all of the endangered languages of the world entered in time for the go live, which was made even more difficult by the kinds of organizational things one has to consider when one is creating a catalog, which I will talk about in a second. In parallel, the ELP site construction was going on by Google and their collaborators. Go live was on June 20th of 2012, yay! And then Google turned the site over to the governance committee a couple months later. So, the kinds of things that one has to think about when creating a catalog of this nature that is global in scope. A lot of these questions are, you know, linguists tend to think they're difficult to answer. So, things like, what do you decide gets a whole language page of its own? What is a language? Because that has ramifications. If it's not a language, it doesn't get its own page, which means it doesn't get dialects or speakers or locations or things like that. So it's very important to get that figured out. Also, who counts as a speaker, semi-speakers, what do you do about those? Also, what about extinct languages? Which means, how long ago does it need to be extinct? Is there still less speakers? You never know, sometimes they pop up again. What about revitalized languages? So that means more those that have died already, but speakers are trying to be created through revitalization programs, which is very tricky if it's not, you know, if you don't have native speakers yet, what is that? And then what about attempts to multiply languages for political or other purposes where scientific criteria would only see one language? Also a problem. And contradicting sources, and on whose authority do we get to decide any of this? So basically the decision was that we represent a range of opinion whenever physically possible. So for extinct languages, if they've gone extinct recently, we include them, err on the side of caution. For revitalized languages, we're figuring out a way to include those well. The speaker number is messy. And then for sources contradicting and the other things, that all gets sent to the regional directors. They get the ultimate say in how this catalog goes because they are the experts in that area. And for things like speaker number, we represent a range. So how many speakers are said to speak fluently, how many are semi-speakers, how old are all of them, what domains is it used in, all that information is in the catalog. So Hopefully some of you got the chance to see John's poster a little while ago, John Van Wey. He talked about the Language Endangerment Index. Basically, this is how we decide how a language is endangered and how endangered it is. We know this is a very complicated issue and there are several solutions, but we decided we wanted our own scale for these purposes. So go look at that poster for more on that. Okay, so now we are caught up to the present and what is currently happening in the catalog. Since go live in June, we've been in phase two, which essentially strives to complete the catalog to the best of anyone's knowledge. That means adding sources that weren't added in phase one, correcting any information that might have been wrong or missing that was added in phase one, and finding those sources that are more difficult to find. So anything that wasn't online or something like that. Right. So we're also continuing to vet user feedback. So those are comments that come in through the ELP site saying, hey, you forgot this. This is my language, and I know this about it. And then we go and we check it out. And once we make sure it's right and we have confirmation and solid sources, then we put it in the catalog. This stage is also the most crucial in terms of the involvement of the regional directors, because we need their expertise to make sure all of the appropriate languages and the information on them makes it into the catalog. They are also in charge of collecting information from the ground, as we say, so going out to the field workers in the communities and finding out what is actually right. So, for LCAT, this is still just the beginning. We just started phase two, as I said. So it's very much a work in progress. Any suggestions you might have would be fantastic. Please submit them to the site. We have about 2 years to finish checking language by language, source by source, all of the information available on all of the endangered languages of the world. However, even after phase two, the site and the database will still require maintenance and oversight. There is a process in place to sustain the catalog so that it does not become obsolete. We will continue to update user comments as they come in. They're very important to us. And also, of course, endangered languages are relatively volatile in terms of speaker number and things like that, so the information in order to be up to date needs to be continually revised over and over. So if any of you have things to contribute to the site, I know a lot of you are field workers, please, by all means, go and upload your sources, the things you have on the language. It would be very appreciated. We need all your help to finish this and make it as good as possible. So thank you very much, and please visit and contribute to the site. Yeah?
I was wondering if there's like a go-live date for the phase two, because I know members of my project team have suggested addition of certain languages, and I feel like I've been waiting a long time, but I wondered if there's sort of a store-up of information that's gonna have a go-live of a second version.
Lyle, I think that's probably for you. Do we have a go live? We don't have a date, do we?
We don't have a specific date for go live. We are going live within hopefully just a few weeks to a month with a host of new features. Stand up here. And with that, we're hoping to input all the suggestions that we haven't quite gotten to yet should go in with that within the month.
Mm-hmm. And also the catalog information gets updated like weekly or something, right?
Yeah. Right.
If we've had the chance to process it, then it will get put up.
It's updated every week, right? But it takes a while to vet things so that sometimes something comes in and we can vet it almost instantly, and other times things come in that are so complex that we have to ask the regional director to go out and reach down to somebody who will reach down to someone who will survey a bunch of people, and then a decision has to be made. But I can't remember.
I perhaps haven't gone through the right channels, so I'll ask you later.
I don't think I've seen your stuff, so if we don't have it, we haven't put it up. But please send it to us again if something happens.
Sure. Yes?
What is the range of opinions being?
So even sometimes among experts, of course, there are disagreements. We just did a big thing about the Totonacan languages, and how do you classify them, and how many are there? And bunches of people disagree about how that should happen. So we have places both for, you know, like differences in speaker category, but we also have comment boxes, both so you can say this person thinks this, but this is what we chose to go for the catalog. But just know that somebody disagrees, that there is another answer out there. You know, that's what I mean.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I am Cornelius Olonuga from Nigeria, Africa.
Uh-huh.
I'm from the list of the regional directors that you have mentioned. It's my opinion that Africa is underrepresented, so to speak. And of course, we know that we have many languages in Africa that people mm-hmm. say are threatened, going extinct. So do you intend to do something about that so that Africa will be properly covered?
Yeah, that's, you want that one?
Yeah.
She's from EMU and handles that.
I handle the African and Australian branches. Yes, I agree that one regional director for the entirety of Africa is really a lot of work for one person. And Matthias Brunzinger has been a wonderful regional director and has vast amounts of knowledge about many, many languages, but it is difficult for him to cover the entire continent. So we have reached out to experts in other regions. We've contacted Lamine Suwak for North Africa, for example. So we try and find experts in particular smaller regions to reach out to if the regional director doesn't feel that their expertise covers a particular area. If it is possible for us to find funding for additional regional directors, we would always love to have more people brought in on the project, but funding is always a concern.
You can mention, we had two, but one of them had to leave. So that's why Africa looks, I mean, two isn't enough either, but two would have been much better than one.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Cool. Is that your question?
Well, there's no further questions, so let's thank our speaker.